thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I am your conductor, Joseph Ford, and as always, ride with me is my homeboy, Mr. Patrick Irvin. What's going on, Pat?
What up?
Yeah. The Freedom Train is sponsored to you by PACS, Inc. That's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. PACS, Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about us and hear the playbacks of your favorite shows. And, you know, tune in week after week after week after week as we get it in. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram at underscore Freedom Train. And guess what? Guess what? Guess what? We've made listening to this podcast even easier. If you have an iPhone and you subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on iTunes, the shows will come directly to your phone. If you have an Android and you subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on the Google Play Music app, episodes come right to your phone. So make sure you do that and stay in tune with us. Pat,
what up?
Going down in the South. You know what I'm saying? In the South. That's how the country boys say, going down in the South.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
What's the fascination with the little Obama girl?
Well, talking about the one that was dancing?
Yeah, first she dancing, and then they mad because she didn't go, instead of going to the DNC, she went to Lollapalooza or whatever the hell it's called.
Man, I don't be listening to them folk, man. That girl can do whatever she feel like doing. She a young girl just like everybody else. They think because she Obama's daughter that she's bound to certain rules. Man, that girl can do whatever they want. People crazy. That show you how crazy these adults are.
Yeah, I mean, I was on my timeline earlier today, and I must have had like 15 pictures of her, or videos, or pictures slash videos of her dancing, and I'm like, y'all like y'all ain't never seen a teenage black girl dance before. Like, I don't get it.
Well, I mean, now, I guess they probably wouldn't, you know, she, you know, if they were talking about how she was dancing, but, you know.
Well, I mean, she get it from her daddy, but, I mean, you know, whatever.
And that girl got a head just like her mama, too, boy. Just like her mama, boy. But she cool, though, man. Let her, I like, man, let her do her thing. She can have fun. She's a young teenage girl transitioning to college. Let her be a college student. It's hype. So
yeah, I just don't get the hype. I'm like, I done seen plenty of college girls that were prettier, better bodied, and better skills, and they ain't get this kind of attention. So
look, man, hey.
I guess when people, you're the first daughter or whatever.
People are different. That's all we need to know. People are different. But We're gonna do something we ain't done in a while. We're going to hit our audience with another one of our own shows of Giants audio biographies. And today, we are covering Dr. Yusef Ben Yakinen. So sit back, relax, and let this bust you in your brain. On December 31, 1918, Yusef Alfredo Antonio Ben Yakinen was born in a Falasha community in Ethiopia to an Afro-Puerto Rican mother and an Ethiopian father. He received his education in various countries such as Puerto Rico, Brazil, Cuba, and Spain. Dr. Ben Yakinen earned his B.S. in civil engineering from the University of Puerto Rico in 1938. In 1939, he received his master's degree from the University of Havana, Cuba, in architectural engineering. He also received his doctoral degrees from the Universities of Havana, Cuba, and Barcelona, Spain, in cultural anthropology and Moorish history. Dr. Ben Yakinen traveled to the United States in the early 1940s. While living in the U.S., he continued his schooling despite the fact that he was working as a draftsman to make a living. In 1949, he was appointed the chair chairman of the African American Studies Department at UNESCO, a position he held until 1970. Dr. Ben Yakinen would later begin teaching Egyptology at Malcolm King College and City College in New York City in 1950. The doctor's next move was becoming an adjunct professor at Cornell University. He gained notoriety for his authorship of 49 books, mostly on the subject of the Nile Valley Civilization. His findings showed that the Nile Valley civilizations had a significant influence on Western cultures. He also affirms that the original Jews were black Africans from Ethiopia, and white Jews took their culture. Since 1957, Dr. Ben Yakinen has coordinated regular tours to the Nile Valley, showing people the truth of the African civilization. Dr. Ben Yakinen moved to Harlem, New York in 1945, and was a mentee of the great George G. M. James, the author of Stolen Letters. Despite his busy schedule and many accomplishments, the great doctor still found time to become a trained lawyer. He also has made several appearances on Gil Noble's television series Like It Is. In 2002, he donated his personal library of 35,000 volumes, manuscripts, and ancient scrolls to the Nation of Islam. Dr. Ben Yakinen is often criticized for promoting black supremacy, but I say he promotes black consciousness. He has dedicated his life to uplifting and empowering the black man across the globe. The information he has presented challenged the more commonly accepted versions of history. These historical stories have conveniently left out the contributions of the Africans to the civilization of mankind. Because of heroes like Dr. Ben Yakinen, generations of African people around the globe have a stronger sense of pride in history. He's taught us that the African has made a significant contribution to mankind and civilization. Dr. Yusef Ben Yakinen, we proudly stand on your shoulders.
Let it ride, let that ride hit your head a little bit. Yeah. Dr. Yusef Ben Yakinen, and you can learn more about Dr. Yusef Ben Yakinen and over 100 other figures or heroes of the African diaspora. If you visit my website at www.ontheshoulders1.com, and that's on the shoulders, the number 1.com. And you can also purchase my book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America, at my website. If you just click on the bookstore tab, you know, go get all the African history you need. Yeah. Pat.
What up?
That's my plug for today.
Good plug for the next 30 minutes.
You know what I'm saying? So now it's time for our social discussion, and you know it's always led by you, my friend. So what's on your mind? What are we getting off our chest today?
Well, keeping in line with people going crazy about the Obama girl, I want to talk about politics in general.
Okay.
Because this, like every presidential election, this one has, quote unquote, divided the country, even though I don't believe the country is really divided. I believe people are just expressing themselves how they really feel and saying what they really want to say. And in this case, we have a very interesting candidate that's giving people the opportunity to say what they really want to say. But I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
I want to talk about what people can really do to have a political impact on their communities.
Okay.
That's what I want to talk about. What are some things that people can do to really have an impact on their community politically? And what are some things that they believe they're doing correct that they're actually not doing correct at all? Are you prepared for those questions, Joseph?
Man, you know, hey man, you know I'm ready. Always. I got my life jacket on right now.
So that's what I want to talk about. And as always, you know, I presented it, so you got first crack at it. Go ahead.
So what are things that we can do to have a better or more positive political impact? First of all, I think we should take the time to start at the basic level of let's learn exactly what politics is, and not just go off of what we think politics is based off of some of the half-truths that people tell us or some of the assumptions that we gather over the years. Because often we grow up and people telling us, you know, things you shouldn't discuss in public is religion and politics. So if I grew up with that ideology in my head that I can't discuss politics in public, then I probably would never learn anything more about politics than what I would learn in my house, if I learn anything in my house about politics, because it's branded in me that I'm not supposed to talk about politics outside of the house. So basically learn the basics about politics. What is politics? How does politics work? How does politics affect you? Then I think we should learn how to make politics work for us. What are the tricks to the trade? Because once we get the basics down, we can get a little fancy with it. So what are the tricks to the trade? How do we advance ourselves politically? How do we use political power to help ourselves? How do we use key people in key positions to make key moves for our community so we can get the things that we need, i.e. the LGBTQ community who just got the right to marry? Being able to use the political system to their advantage. I don't think the black community as a whole really understands politics at its core. So we don't know how to use politics to our advantage. We don't know how to use politics to advance our situation. And when we do have key people in key positions, those people seem to not necessarily have our best interest after a while. So I would say start there. How can we get this information to the people? Because we all know the local elections are more important than the presidential election, but the presidential elections are the more popular elections. So how are the laws and the ordinances and the things that are given out in your city, in your community, how are these things affecting you? Are they helping you? Are they hurting you? And if things are hurting you, well, how can we reverse these? Who are the people that have the power to reverse these? And how can we get these people on our side? Do we have the economics to back that up? Now, so those are all the things that would come to my mind first. So I guess if you talk about plan, action plan, or what can we do, my first thing would be to start with that education piece. Learning exactly what politics is. What's the history of politics? How have politics been used? Certain books we should read. I think two great books to read that can help in the political realm is The Art of War and The Prince by Machiavelli. I mean, you know, Art of War by Sun Tzu and The Prince by Machiavelli. Taking those, and you know, other books as well, but those are the first two that come to mind. And taking this information and being able to use it to, like I said earlier, to help us. Because if we're not using it to help us, why are we playing this political game? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, a couple of things come to mind, and I always find political discussions interesting, especially where the community is concerned, because we think back to Obama's election, his first election, back in 2008, when he had a supermajority, and for whatever reason, well, we know the reasons, but we're not going to get into that, he chose to try to play partisan instead of pushing his things through. And then, you know, we failed to show up midterms, and the Democrats lost control of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw how Congress can pretty much railroad a president if they
right.
want to and if there's enough of them.
Right.
And despite learning that lesson, Congress maintained control of the House. And despite learning that lesson, even now to this day, or despite, now I won't say we learned it, but despite being given that lesson, we still find ourselves in a situation where we value presidential elections way more than we value local elections.
Right.
Even to the point where you can have presidential candidates stand up on the podium and basically lie about the things that they're going to do because they can't do anything by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. I think the educational piece is important. I think the focus needs to be shifted. People, and I know it's easier to keep track of one man than it is to keep track of many, but like, you need to know what's going on with your school boards. You need to know what's going on with your mayors. You need to know what's going on with your city commissioners, your county commissioners, your police chiefs, your sheriffs. You need to know what's going on with all of these people, because they're the ones that are going to have a more direct impact on your life. I really don't concern myself too much about Donald Trump getting voted into office or Hillary Clinton. I'm going to vote, but it's not a primary concern, because at the end of the day, I'm not really going to feel that as much as I would feel an asshole being voted in as mayor or governor.
Right, right.
Or as much as I would feel a collection of assholes being voted in on city council.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, some of the other things that
People can have a direct effect on you.
Right, right. And people are always saying nobody cares until it hits home, but that never really registers with politics, because you look at Florida, for example. You guys have had an asshole in control there for a minute. That should be hitting home for everybody in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. People are still just, you know. So I think that's one thing. Like, the focus needs to be shifted to local elections. I think the other thing that needs to happen is people need to be educated on the fact that the results of an election are not permanent.
Mm-hmm.
You can fire a motherfucker.
Right.
Like, if somebody's in office doing something you don't like, initiate the process. It's a little bit different in every state, but for the most part, all it requires is getting a certain amount of signatures on the document, turning that document in, and it'll start up the recall process. And best part about that is you get to have somebody else in mind that you want to put in office that you could put in certain states. When you vote no, there's a block right underneath that where you can put in whoever you want to fulfill that term.
Right.
So.
Right.
That could be the person that lost in the previous election that you voted for. You know, like, that could be a lot of other things going on there. So I just think there's a lot of misinformation and inaccurate information surrounding politics that really needs to be hammered out. And like you said, until we get to a point where we're okay with talking about it, even if you disagree with me, that information is never going to get out.
Well, see, I know for us in our community, that's one of our biggest issues, is we don't know how to get over the emotional blockages, the emotional things. You know, it's okay, like you just said, it's okay to disagree about a political candidate. It's okay. But it's not okay for us to disagree to the point where we can no longer coexist because you think I'm crazy for voting for this. Like, this election. Like, I mean, come on, let's be real. Like, you arguing between, it's almost like you arguing between getting hit by a Mack truck and getting hit by one of them other big trucks. I mean, you still getting hit by a big truck. It just, well, I prefer to get hit by the truck with the dog emblem on the front rather than the Ford emblem on the front. Like, you still getting hit. So, you should be voting for people who have your best interest and for people who will carry out things that will help you improve your situation. They should be agents of you. They're an extension of you. You should understand that. Like you just said, though, how many people really know that you can fire your politicians, you can fire your elected officials? How many people know that? If you don't know, go look it up for your state. This is, you got homework. Go look it up for your state. Go look up how you can fire or impeach or remove people from elected seats if they're not doing the things that they're supposed to do. But it also works best when you have a community who is active and engaged. And we have to be active and engaged more so on local politics than we are on the presidential politics. Look how we are out there rallying and doing all these things. The DNC and the RNC are pep rallies. You don't have to show up. But to those polls, you have to show up. You shouldn't be the person sitting at home watching the DNC and getting all hyped up and you ready for the presidential election while you don't even know who you're supposed to be voting for on your local level when elections are right around the corner in November. You should know that. And because we don't know these things, we continuously handicap ourselves when it comes to politics.
So let me ask you something else, because we were talking, I saw you were having a chit-chat with somebody. You said you didn't necessarily believe that we needed to have our own party. Why do you say that?
Well, right now, because, and especially with those choices that they gave a group of people where only two had any political experience out of, well, it was a group of maybe, let's say, 10, and only two may have had political experience. But my thing is, when you understand politics and when you understand how to place key people in key positions, you don't necessarily need a party, because let's say black people are doing what we're supposed to do. So we have key people on the Democratic and Republican side. So we got key people on Democrat and Republican side because we're playing the game smart. It don't even matter who wins, because we're going to win anyway, because we're going to have to keep people in key positions. So do we really need a party right now, or do we really need to know how to really play the game? Because I think if we're focusing too much on building this vehicle for us rather than learning the basics of the vehicle, then even when you get in the vehicle, you're not going to go anywhere. That was my thinking behind that.
I feel you. That actually makes sense, man. That actually makes sense. I mean, I kind of agree with you when I saw it, but there was some, you know, I had some misgivings that I wasn't sure about, but the way you just explained that makes sense. And I actually like that idea, because right now we do spend too much time locked in on one party. Like right now we're locked in on the Democratic Party, and it's no secret, it's been said before. Because of that, the Republicans ignore us because they know that we're not going to vote Republican. And the Democrats ignore us because they know we're not going to vote Republican.
Right.
So, you know, you find yourself in a situation, and while it might be tempting to create a new party right now, I don't think we have any of the necessary prerequisites to get that done, be it knowledge of the political system, be it economic means, be it unity, be it anything. So, you know, because you got to understand, when you create your own party, it's not going to be as simple as, okay, now we got our own party, now we're going to vote for our own party. Look, there are a lot of people out there with their own parties. You got the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, mm-hmm. the Tree Party. You got a whole bunch of other parties.
Mm-hmm.
But most people have never heard of them because they don't have the strength in numbers or the economic backing to compete
right.
with the Democratic and the Republican Party. And that's essentially what you would be doing. You would be competing with those other parties. And there's only
right.
44 million of us.
Right. And I mean, It's the system is designed for those two parties to be out in the front. I mean, if a bird only have two wings.
Right,
so,
right.
So I mean, any other party is opposing these two parties, no matter how much of the illusion you want to believe that these two parties are, you know, so much against each, because they come together when they need to.
Oh yeah.
Stuff come together when it needs to. So I had two questions for that. Well, I had not two questions. I had one question for them, because my question was, are we creating a new party specifically for black people, or are we just creating a new party? Because I'm just looking back at history, and we as black people in America, we have a long history of being messed over by the other groups who we team up with. And I'm not saying we can't be friendly. I'm not saying we can't be cordial. But everybody don't need to be all up in our business when we're doing our things. So if we're creating a party just for black people, all right, cool. It's just for black people. But what's the goal of our party? And how do we get the economic power that we need?
Right, right. Well, you know, that's another point, though, is, is a party of black people just for black people, like, is that even viable? Like, take all the emotion out of it. Stop thinking about they're going to call me a coon if I'm not with it. Take all of that away. Is it possible for a party, specifically for black people, to gain any kind of national traction? Is that possible? Do we have enough economics and enough manpower in this country to really maintain our own party? Like, not even, we're not even talking about competing right now. We're just talking about to maintain our own party. And if the answer to that is yes, then the very next question is, okay, now we're talking about competing. Do we have enough resources, enough capital, and not just financially, but also economic, or also intelligence, creativity, knowledge? Do we have enough capital for this party to be competitive? And the answer to that question in my mind, when I take all the emotion out of it, is no.
No, I mean, not it. No, it's a big no, especially compared to the who we would be opposing. Now, some people would take what you said and say, and their response, well, we have this $1.3 trillion buying power, right? But that's potential power. It's not actual power that's being used on a regular basis. It's potential power. And if we were to work as a unit, then yes. But this political party wouldn't be all of us. It wouldn't be all of Black America. It'd be factions of Black America that decided to get together and create a political party. So what kind of power do the members of this party have, and what kind of ties and allegiances do they have?
Well, you know what? Let me real quick to the whole spending power thing. Here's the deal with that. One, yes, black people command $1.2 trillion in spending power. And yes, you know, that's a lot of money. But in the grand scheme of things, in the grand scheme of the American GDP, it's about 10% of the American GDP, which means if we're 12% of the population and we only control 10% of the GDP, we're underrepresented. We're not producing our weight. To another point, yes, we have this much in spending power, but we're creating probably 10 times that in wealth for other communities.
Right.
Which is another aspect at this point. Consumer power, spending power is no real power, because if the producers stop producing, the consumers have nothing. So right. in a situation where we're in, yeah, we can say, well, we could just take our dollars somewhere else. But if you look at the industries that black people are lacking in, manufacturing, for one, if all of the white industries decided they're going to agree to do business like this, who's going to provide those goods to the black community? Because there are no black businesses to fill in those voids.
Right.
So we have to separate out when consumer power is actually power and when it's just something to make us feel good and sleep well at night. But to another point, our $1.2 trillion in spending power, again, that we love to talk about, look, there are white think tanks, Republican and Democratic think tanks, that spend trillions of dollars every year. And we're talking about more than one.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be, and that's if we aggregated all of the black wealth in America, which is not going to happen. You're talking about getting the Jay-Z's, the Oprah's, the Michael Jordan's, to get all of them on board. I'm not going to take a whole time decomposing that argument, but I do think it's an argument that's made without a lot of critical thought being put into what it actually means. All it means is that we make $1.2 trillion working for other people in most instances. So, yeah, out of the trillions of dollars that we produce for this nation gives us back $1.2 trillion to spend however we see fit. And instead
Right.
of spending that in our own communities, we spend it in other communities, which should actually make that number not something that we should brag about, but something we should be ashamed of.
Well, once again, that's why my first tenet is that education. I mean, All right. How long did it take white America to build their political power to what it is now? Because I'm sure it didn't just happen overnight. I'm sure it just didn't happen within a couple of years just because you got a couple people who talk good and got degrees and stuff like that. You know, it took time to build that political power, and we have to understand that. But I don't think we have the mindset of building our power base. I think we have the assumption that we already have some sort of political power, so we can just create something and run and just go. And it's not, we don't. We don't have the means to compete on that political realm just yet. Do we have the minds? Yes. We have the minds. We have the people who are brilliant. But we don't have the power, the real power. The real, not the power that our parents blind to us about. I'm talking about the real economic power and, if need be, military power. Because that's a part of the political realm. Because the president is the head of the military. I mean, you have to think about all of these things when you're talking about politics. All of these things come into the realm. Now, of course, when we're talking about creating that political power, I mean, that political party, we're not necessarily going that deep because people want a party to represent, that they can feel like represents them when they go out to vote so they can have strength in numbers. But I'm sorry, I'm not joining a political party led by Killer Mike. No, nothing against Killer Mike, but Killer Mike don't have no political experience. And somebody was like, it ain't about experience, we need fresh blood. Fool, we ain't going shark hunting. This is politics. This is politics, man. Come on, man. Now, I can see if you were talking fresh blood and we're talking about a pool of people who have political experience. But you're talking about people who talk good about race and racial relations. And they had Jane Elliott up there. Come on, man. After having the chance to talk to Jane Elliott face to face, nice lady. But Jane Elliott said out of her mouth, "I am an educator." That don't mean she's ready to be part of somebody's political party, even be a leader in the political party. She's an educator. She spent all her life being an educator, from a school teacher to a school teacher in an informal way. Like, come on, man. Tim Weiss, because Tim Weiss talked good. D.L. Hughley, Jay-Z, really? Really? David Banner, really?
This was ridiculous. I will give you that. Like, I looked at the list, too, and I was like, okay, there's only one real viable person on this list, and that's Dr. Claude Anderson. Everybody else is, no disrespect, I might love the way they speak, but they're a joke for what you're talking about.
Right.
Too many of them have too much ego. Too many others are too emotional. In my opinion, no disrespect to Killer Mike, I love listening to him, but the brother seems
he's very
too
emotional. Right.
To be in that role. But again, you know, like when you talk about power, it's such an important thing to talk about when we're talking about the community, because like we never really define power. So, you know, I'm going to put my definition of what power is. Power is the ability to control and move resources. It's that simple for me. The ability to control. And when I say move, I mean transmute. I mean change from one thing to another. I mean the ability to not just get it from here to there, but the ability to turn gold dust or gold mineral that's the size of a grain of sand into a gold brick.
Right.
Like that's in my opinion, that's what true power is, the ability to control and transmute resources. And actually they go hand in hand. You can't simply say the ability to control resources, because if you can control it, you can do everything else to it. So
right.
And when I say resources, I'm not just talking about minerals. I'm talking about capital. I'm talking about people. I'm talking about ideas and thoughts. I'm talking about, you know, creativity. All of those things are resources that can be
right.
used for various different things. And the person that controls those resources is the person that has the power, which goes back to the other discussion where we talk about spending power. When you use the term spending power together, you contradict any real power that you might have. Unless you're talking to, no, well, there is no unless. Because
right.
if you're talking about the money you got to spend, unless you own all your means of production and all your economies of scale and all of your everything else that have to do with you acquiring that money, then the real power involved in your spending power is in the hands of the people that gave you the money to spend in the first place.
Right. Right.
But again, and one other point I'm going to get off of this spending power thing. You know, that's a pet peeve of mine. We're actually fourth in the nation per capita when it comes to spending power.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just sit that on your heads real quick. You know, with everybody. I ain't even going to go into detail. I'm going to just leave that there. But when you talk about power, it's very critical that people understand what power is and begin to frame the discussions in that manner. Even when we're talking about politics, what kind of power would we have even if we aggregated ourselves and came together as a group? Would we have the ability to control politicians if we came together as a group and competed with all of the other organizations and groups out there trying to control politicians?
Right. I mean, that's really where it comes down to. Do you, well, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Do you have that power? Do you have the power to actually make people think twice? Do you have the power to make people do what you need them to do? Because if you don't, I mean, it's like, I guess the best analogy I can come up with in my head, like, you remember the movie The Little Giants? And, like, think about the first half of that football game and the Cowboy team just running up and down the field, dragging them little boys. Because you brought a slingshot to a bazooka gunfight. And when you bring a slingshot to fight bazookas, you're going to lose every time. Every time, because, like I said earlier, that party itself would not have the total economic backing of Black America. So
it wouldn't. A lot of the heavyweights, a lot of the quote-unquote bazookas in the community wouldn't show up. And they dropped this fact out there, too. I think we talked about this before, Joe. Upper class for the Black community starts at $66,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the top 1%, of the Black community starts at around $185,000 a year. That's the top 1%. Meanwhile, the top 1% for white America, who will largely be our competitors, is, I want to say, close to a million. So you're looking at that distinct difference in power where we can't even compare our upper class to their upper class, because our upper class starts in their middle class. You know, if the middle class white America suddenly became Black overnight, they would all be upper class. So
right.
the habits and the mannerisms aren't even the same. Like that, like, I just don't think we give things enough thought. And people often say, well, one step at a time. That's fine. We should take things one step at a time. But that's after we figured out a good chunk of the steps.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just start, you know what I'm saying? You don't just get in your car and start driving and then say, oh, man, this is where I'm trying to go. No. Before you get in your car, you make up your mind where you're trying to go. And if you don't know how to get there, you'll look at a map, you'll use your GPS, you'll use whatever you have to use to figure out how to get there. And this is before you leave.
Right.
Why
right.
are we content to say we got to take it one step at a time, and the only thing we've thought of is that one step? That again, that's
well, that yeah, no long, lack of long term planning, lack of real planning, lack of short term planning, lack of a plan at all, straight emotion. So because I'm emotional and I'm mad that the conditions are what they are, I'm just going to be mad and we ain't going to really make no real change. Like, because if we took politics serious, if we really took politics serious, we could actually make an impact in our communities, but we don't really take politics serious. And there are various reasons. You know, I think ego and a lot of the conditioning that we have within us, those are some of the real issues that why we struggle with doing what we need to do. Everybody seems like they have the answers. I'm not saying I have the answers. All I'm saying is I'm just looking at history and I'm just looking at common sense. And practical stuff.
I don't have the answers either, Joe. But I know what the answer don't look like tomorrow.
Right, right, exactly. My man's lying, yeah.
Right. I mean, I know what the answer don't look like. And I got to be honest. If we really took politics as seriously as we should, my biggest gripe right now is that everywhere I go, I see people sitting back waiting for a politician to emerge that's going to agree with them and that's going to do everything they want them to do.
No, and not only a politician, but a leader. People are looking for a leader to rise, period.
And that is not how you play the game. Like, you create your leaders. You create the person you want. Martin Luther King didn't want to be a leader. The community kind of pushed that on him because he was what they wanted. And in a lot of ways, a lot of people are saying the government pushed him on us. We get in that debate later, but the fact of the matter remains, there was a segment of Black America that wanted him to step up. Malcolm X was created. Otherwise, he's still been in that jail cell. You know, you create the leaders you want from the resources and the people you have available to you. That's how you get shit done. You create the politicians you want from the children and the young adults and the young people you have available to you. You create the policies you want by writing them yourself. That's how you take control of the situation. But again, you know, we got that pray and stay syndrome. You know what I'm saying? That I'm going to just pray for it and stay here and wait for God to tell me to move. And God is like, man, I ain't going to tell you shit till you pick up your foot.
Right. When you going to do something for yourself? Like, why are you always waiting on me? And I gave you everything you need to do what you need to do, but you refuse to use it.
Right.
Because let me tell you what's going to happen. When TNT released that little stupid show about race in America, you know what I mean? People going to tune into that just to be mad at Charles Barkley when they already know they're going to be mad at Charles Barkley. Mm-hmm. But Charles Barkley have already told you repeatedly that he don't really know this stuff. He just going off of what his grandmama told him. But see, the game is, we said, how many times have we said we want to have a conversation about race?
Right.
All right, and here's your conversation.
Right. But you know, like Amos Wilson said, Dr. Amos Wilson, I refuse to believe that God gave me a brain and all of these wonderful faculties for intelligence, reason, and comprehension and logic, and then intended for me not to use any of them.
Right.
It doesn't, but you know, like you said, we've been saying for, we were having a discussion with someone else and they pointed this out. They are amazingly good at giving us what we ask for.
Right, in the worst ways.
And it's like making a wish to a demon. You're going to get what you wanted, but it ain't going to be how you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, like in the movies. You ask for more money?
So we've been begging for a conversation, thinking that we could just talk this out, and eventually they would come around and be nice. And some of them might, but largely the culture is not going to shift like that. And so now, every time we have a conversation, they always find some Negro that it seemed like they'd grown in the lab to get on stage and basically talk shit about Black people and agree with white people. And then they say, well, we had a conversation.
Right. Right. I mean, because it's a joke, but it's showing you that they understand the game and they know how to play it because they have the rules and the power. It's just like the board game you were creating, your board game, and showing you how you are going to lose when you don't know what you're doing. It's like when I'm going to present to young men, and little dude was like, he want to do something. I ask him, well, have you at least tried to plan stuff? I'd be like, I don't need no plan. And I asked him, well, you ever been to California? He was like, nah. I say, well, you think if you ever tried to get to California without a map, you make it? He was like, no. Same thing in life, same thing in politics, same thing in all these other things. If you don't have a map, if you don't have a plan, if you don't have some stuff laid out, you're going to lose.
Right.
You're going, and even if you do event, well, I die. I ain't even gonna lie. This ain't no movie, man. This ain't no video game. There ain't no none of that. We shall overcome stuff, man. You're gonna lose, and that's just the point. And we're comfortable with continuing doing the same things over and over and over. I mean, we are in love with Obama's swag more so than what his policies and how those things affected us. Like, because how did, like, throughout these last 8 years under Obama presidency, how has the decisions that he's made as a president affected Black America positively and negatively? And let's do an honest assessment and see how many people are really willing to accept the truth that come from that.
But you know, Joe, one of the things you just said is interesting, is that we're basically clinically insane. We keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the interesting things about that is that it's not caused by anything but ignorance.
Right.
Like, we refuse to learn. And in the information age, there's no excuse for being ignorant. When you can log onto your computer, type in Google, whatever you want to find out, and it'll put it up. You can go on to Google and type in, how big is a blue whale's penis?
Mm-hmm.
It'll tell you. Now, why is there anything out there that you don't know, outside of the fact that you don't know that you don't know it? Because you can't blame people for ignorance in the unknown areas. But when
right.
it comes to history, civil rights, Black people in America, things of that nature, there's no excuse. No excuse for us to be repeating the exact same things we did 60, 70 years ago and making the exact same request that we made from the political establishment 60, 70 years ago. Seeing as how we're having to make those same requests again, it should be common sense that they didn't work last time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I mean,
we refuse to learn how to play the game, and they keep playing the shit out of us.
Well, look how many Black people think that the Democratic Party is a better choice than the Republican Party, or the Republican Party is a better choice than the Democratic Party, when they don't understand both parties are working against you, because you don't know how to make the parties work for you.
Yeah, they're both ignoring the shit out of you. If you want to be nice, if you want to be sinister, they both working against you. If you want to be nice, they both ignoring the fuck out of you. Neither one of them are a favorable, you know, favorable state of being for the community.
Right. So, I mean, this is a big subject. This is something that we got to start taking serious. We got to grow up and be more adult-like when it comes to politics. We can't, like, the video that was shared the other day about the guy that was the Black Lives Matter supporter, and he's arguing with the 16-year-old kids about politics, and they're arguing about who's the better choice out of Hillary and Trump. And it's like, come on, man, here we go. Like, I love the Facebook post that have Trump as the Joker and Hillary as Two-Face, because I'm like, man, that's one of the most accurate posts I've seen in a while. You know, but it's like, that whole scene showed Black people on all levels how we don't really get it. And not just Black people, but people, period. Like, the general population of America just don't get it. You know, why are we arguing about candidates? Why? Because if my perception is this one is better, that's my perception. Who cares what you think? If your people show up and show out, my opinion don't matter. And even if your people don't show up and show out, if you have the key people in key places in economic power, who win don't matter. But to see those two going back and forth and both sounding crazy, because it's like you are defending two serial killers, but my serial killer is not as bad as yours, because mine killed people with knives. Yours raped people and then kill them. You know, mine just cut them up. But yours rape people and then kill them. It's like, y'all really arguing like that over these two? Like, for real.
Well, it just, the situation is just so crazy, bro. I mean, it really is. And when it comes to politics, we play the game. And there are a bunch of different ways to play the game. So it's not even like there has to be a set path for how you want to play it. But the way we're doing it is wrong. And that should be obvious just by looking at our current state of being. Like, we don't, you know, like, we still see getting the law passed as being successful.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind, you know, the second component to getting any piece of legislation passed is getting enforcement made for it. Yeah, we can pass all kinds of laws all day long. But if don't nobody ever enforce them, that's like in the community. You know, well, we talk about how, you know, we got to deal with pedophilia and rape and sexual violence and domestic violence and things of that nature in the community. We talk about that stuff, you know, increasingly more often. But ain't nobody saying nothing to Uncle Joe who been raping, you know, his nieces and nephews for the last 30 years. They still just telling their kids, don't go around Uncle Johnny's house.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, yeah, we talking about it, but Uncle Johnny's still doing what Uncle Johnny been doing, so. So, yeah, we talking about police need to stop killing black folk, but police still killing black folk, so.
I mean, but see, even in that, we feel as if there's nothing that we can do to help to get the police to stop killing us. Look at the actions that we take. Look at the inaction that we take. And when people do take proper action, they don't get backed by the rest of the community because people are like, well, they ain't really messing with me until somebody get killed and everybody mad because we're past that 2-week wave. But if we use politics right, oh, man, our whole situation could be totally different.
You know, and that 2-week phrase, that 2-week wave, which is something we started talking about, it's been at least a couple years now, hasn't it?
Been about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is it seems like we're hitting a point of decreasing marginal utility, meaning the waves are getting shorter and shorter. It's not even 2 weeks no more. You know, now it's a couple days, you know, before we on to the next thing. I mean, you think about it. A couple weeks ago, there was videos on the internet of a brother being shot and killed at point-blank range by the police.
Mm-hmm.
Point-blank range, a video of somebody in real life getting murdered. And people were talking about that for all of 4 or 5 days.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about somebody was actually murdered on video. We all witnessed somebody get murdered in real life. Not a movie, not a serial drama or anything like that. Like, this is real life. This man just got shot and murdered in real life, and he's literally not here anymore.
Right. Hey, I keep seeing something about this young lady who just shot and killed by the police the other day, today or yesterday or something. Some light-skinned young lady who they've been showing a lot of videos saying, I don't know what city or state, saying she was just killed.
Why she got to be light-skinned, Joe?
No, she is, though. She is. She light-skinned for real.
You can't just say she black. Why she got to be? There you go with that colorism again.
No, it ain't. I see real color. My eyes work. but even the people talking about that, like, what real action are we going to take? Like, if you are really sick and tired of people dying, do something different. What can you do in your community to make things better in your community? How can you be prepared? Do something different. Now, I know here, August 26th, we got everything locked up. August 26th here in Tallahassee at the Terrence Freegley Community Center. We're going to have a forum on politics. I want people. We're gonna have three politicians come in and teach the people about the basics of politics. What is politics? Why do we use politics? Why are politics important? And how can we use politics to help advance ourselves? And we're gonna have And we're gonna have three lawyers come in to talk about the different aspects of law that affect, like, what are the laws that affect us the most, and how do we learn, how do we better learn these laws, how do we better learn to use these laws to help us? So, you know, we got everybody locked in and confirmed, so it's going down.
I'm coming.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to be the MC, right?
If you want to, you want to moderate it?
Moderate?
Yeah.
I got too much to say.
Well, we'll scale it. We'll learn how to teach you how to scale it back before we get you out there. But to me, I mean, and like I said earlier, I don't have all the answers, you know. And this event that I'm putting together, man, hey, you may look back on it 10 years later and say, what the hell was Joseph doing? But damn it, I'm doing something.
Right.
And that's what we need to start doing. Just start doing something. Do something. What can we do different? Now, I know that education piece is missing. That's why we continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over and over. And yes, and if I hear another person say, well, what would Dr. King have done? Damn it, we don't know, because even his message didn't really help him, because he died a violent death. So.
Right. Right. That's the question you got to ask yourself. Yeah, well, what would Dr. King have done? But here's a better question. Would it have worked?
Right. Right.
Because a lot of the stuff that he did get a chance to do before y'all killed him for being nonviolent, obviously it didn't work, because we're still hearing the same problem, having the same situation.
Right. Right. Hey. We present ourselves as a joke to the world on a regular basis and wonder why we get no respect. So, one time for you, man. I hope y'all don't tune into this Charles Barkley thing and get mad, because you know he don't know what he's talking about. See, the thing is about race and politics is and after you get through all that, you know, I hope you say something significant to you. So
this be one of the moments where I'm glad I don't have cable. Although I'm sure that's not gonna save me, because I'm sure somebody gonna soundbite everything he say.
Man, you're going to see it. You're going to see it.
Yeah, they gonna put it on social media. Guess what this fool said. Let me guess.
Really?
Foolish?
Really?
I mean, so, he is a fool. Ain't that what fools do?
It's like you go fishing and you're mad because a fish did what fish do.
You know,
I don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe. Nah, I don't get it.
Nah, it's stupid. It's like asking a mute person a question and then getting mad when they don't answer.
Yeah.
You knew he couldn't talk when you asked him the question, but you asked him the question anyway. Now you mad because he won't talk to you.
Man, the sign said, do not feed the animals. You fed the animals, got bit, now you want to sue the zoo.
Right.
Okay. All
right. Right. And the old man told you in the store, don't feed them after midnight and don't get them wet. And you did both.
And now we got
gremlins to worry about.
And they made gremlins 2 and 3, which was horrible.
Mm-hmm. I ain't see the third one. I saw the second one.
That junk ain't scared me. I was looking at that like, this is funny. Like, this is funny.
Gross, right? I thought it was disgusting. You didn't watch it at the same time.
I know, like, big old wet boogers running around.
Right.
So.
I can't. And then they had the nerve to put lipstick on one of them. What the hell is this?
Right, right. Hey, man. Now, you want to know one of the funniest things, even though I like the beat in the song, one of the funniest things about this whole thing with Donald, especially with Donald Trump, is they made the F. Donald Trump song. So, and it's like, man, y'all funny. Like, y'all took it that far. And then the first line, I like white folk, but I don't like you. Everybody in the hood want to fight you. Okay,
oh,
so
yeah,
what?
I know what you're talking about.
So what? All right. Everybody in the hood want to fight the police, but when they get their chance, they don't.
Right, right. You know, we got to come to the conclusion. People ain't scared of the hood no more.
Why would they? The hood is a joke, man. George Zimmerman still walking around.
Right.
Who's afraid of these so-called killers when George and Darren Wilson still walk around?
George Zimmerman walking around. His life is turning into basically a big fuck you to the black community.
Right. He take the opportunity to rub it in our face. And he's still safe. I guarantee you George Zimmerman can walk in any of these hoods or any of these black neighborhoods and won't nobody do nothing. They gonna talk. Yeah, they'll talk junk, and somebody might throw something at him, but ain't nobody gonna do nothing to him.
Man, I'm pretty positive George Zimmerman walking through the hood for fun. He probably feel safer in the hood than he do in white community.
Right. Because white people are the really ones he really got to worry about, because they actually do kill people. They will mess you up. Skin you and wear your skin.
The only people got to be scared of being in the hood is other black people.
Because we ain't going to protect ourselves. Because we ain't going to protect ourselves. So.
But that damn George Zimmerman, as long as he alive, there is no fear of the hood. There's no fear of black people, period. And I'm not advocating killing the man or nothing like that. But I am saying, you know, we gotta stop with this whole white folks scared of us thing. No, they not.
Right. Please let's touch that, because white people saying that they're afraid of us, that's a tactic. That's propaganda. That's all types of stuff. Now you got some white people who buy into that, but if white people were that afraid of us, the things that they do to us, they wouldn't do it.
Right.
Like, cause let's be real. There are some black neighborhoods where the police will not go, because they know in those certain neighborhoods, those are far and few, when they know they will get killed in those neighborhoods, because people are just that crazy over there. But for the majority, white people ain't scared of black people. Come on, man. They come up and pat you on your head.
Right. Start touching your hair without asking.
Right. Oh, an old white woman will walk up on you real quick. They ain't afraid of us, though.
So, anyways.
Yeah, man. Hey. But next week, though,
what we got?
Dungeon Family in the house, man.
What?
Dungeon Family is in the house. Reuben Bailey, a.k.a. Poet Big Rube, first generation Dungeon Family, going to be on the train next week, man.
First generation.
Going down.
You know, these old, them young kids don't know nothing about that.
Man, one of my favorite lines when he was like, they are psychosodomizing your mandula oblongata. I was like, yeah, dog. Yeah, dog. Yeah. Spitting that thing, man. Going to your brain. Get it right, man. Big Rude, man. Outcast. Get him up. Going down, man. So I'm excited. I don't know about other people, but I'm an outcast. I'm a Dungeon Family fan, so I'm excited, man.
I feel you. And we're going to make it happen, make it pop. And what else we got?
That's next week, but then coming up after that, the week after that, we have Mr. Eric Thomas. And no, we ain't talking about you want it badly, you can breathe, Eric Thomas. We're talking about this Eric Thomas. He is within the ministry, and he uses his ministry to help the community, help people in business realms, and even in the political realm, at the grassroots level. He uses all of his resources to help uplift and empower his communities. And so we're going to be talking to him. And then, don't make me lie, but I think the following week we're going to be interviewing Miss Andy Johnson, who is the founder and creator of Andy Cakes. She got some cupcakes, she got some brownies, all that stuff. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm hungry.
It's going down.
Yes, sir. So, man, you know how we do it. So, we would like to thank you all for tuning into the Freedom Train podcast series. You know, I'm Joseph Ward, your conductor, and I'm your favorite rapper's biggest inspiration. Remember that, too.
Gotcha.
And we got my man, Patrick Irvin, who is your daddy's uncles, brothers, granddaddy's biggest inspiration. So make sure y'all remember that. You know what I'm saying? About? So remember, our mission is to connect professionals, business owners, and resources to our community members to help uplift and empower our communities. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.PACSinc.org. And while you're online, you already know, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.FreedomTrainRadio.com. Yeah, and subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and Google Play Store so you can get the episodes come right to your phone. We made it so convenient for you. And then the last thing you need to do while your finger's working is follow the Freedom Train on Instagram and Twitter at _FreedomTrain. And if you don't do none of that, God gonna be mad. Right. Somebody gonna be mad. My grandma gonna be mad. So... you know how we do, man. So, man, with that being said, you know how we do. Two fingers up like a player. We're going to split them apart and see y'all next week. Peace out.